Well, one of our highest-rated watched television shows on our Beyond Belief television program, of course, beyondbelief.com, is an interview I did with David Wilcox some time ago. And David, of course, has his own programs on the Gaiam television network called Wisdom Teachings, and he's just started a new one called Disclosure as well. In a moment, David joins us. We're going to start by talking with him about the Secret Space Program right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. David Wilcock has been an author, a lecturer, a researcher, a pawn and a king. He's intensively researched ufology, ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and of course he's been the subject of an international bestseller, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. He's written a number of other books, including The Source, and David is, of course, a superstar on the Gaiam television network, Wisdom Teachings and Disclosure. Disclosure just started again, David, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Disclosure as the show that I'm doing, we've been trying to get this launched for a year, really. I think I signed the contract like a year ago. But
Good for you. Up and running, finally.
We got a lot of interviews in the can now, and so it's all coming together.
Good for you. How have you been?
Well, pretty good. I don't know what kind of combination of caffeine, superfoods, and go juice you must be on to stay up this late every night. But, I'll do it with you for one night, dude.
I keep pushing, David. I keep pushing. And you got to keep doing this. And it's always good to see you in person, my friend. And I am amazed constantly at the amount of people that just continue to flock to you, whether they're conferences like the Conscious Life Expo or wherever we may go, you seem to have a following that is growing, and I've seen it grow every year. Good for you.
Well, it's funny, but in the mid-1990s, I was trying to use that dictation software to write a book, and I realized that a lot of the things I was saying were not necessary for sentences and, in fact, were very useless when it came to trying to write a book with my voice. And that's when I began to practice. I said, you know, if I want to be on the radio someday, because at the time I wanted to be on Coast and I'd never been, I said, if I want to be on the radio someday, I really ought to start articulating all my sentences as if everything was going to be transcribed and I wanted it all to be perfect.
Hmm.
And it took years of practice to get to the point where I'm now this silver-tongued soothsayer that I am.
You sharp-tongued, silver-tongued soothsayer. So I got an email from our science advisor tonight, Richard C. Hoagland, and Richard's working on a program that has to do with space. And he says, when can we book this? And I said, Richard, let me tell you something. I've just done a couple shows about Mars over the last few weeks. And I've got David Wilcock on tonight, and we're going to talk about a lot of things, but including the Secret Space Program. I've got to push you on the back burner, and I'm saying this just to rib him, David. And he is going absolutely nuts, and he sends me back another email. Do you know how important this is, the significance of this story? And I said, yeah, I'll probably cover it with David tonight.
Oh, my God.
So the next time you talk to good old Richard C., just tell him hi. But
yeah,
anyways.
And in the meantime, I'll have him look through the bullet holes in my body.
The Secret Space Program. I remember you were on my show several years ago, and you said you thought very soon ETs would be flanking President Obama with disclosure. That kind of disclosure. Hasn't happened yet.
Hey, you know, I like feeling the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
I know.
A little bit.
I got to call you on it.
A little roasted. This is like the Justin Bieber roast and the David Wilcock roast.
Yeah, no, that's better. You're better.
Hey, you know, I think that would have happened, and there were five different groups that stood up to stop it. So when we're talking about the space program, I would say that there's some very intrinsic things that people should keep in mind, which is, we're kicking the can around about stuff that happened like 60, 70 years ago. We're still covering Roswell. We're still covering Philadelphia experiment. You know, what if, do you think the government's going to be intimidated by the fact that these guys got stuck in the hull of their ship when they tried to send them through a portal?
Not at all.
Come on. So
I don't even think they're intimidated when we discuss stories like that. You know, I think in the old days they figured, oh my gosh, let's not get this revealed. Let's keep it a secret. I don't think they care anymore.
Well, you got to remember that one of the big things here is compartmentalization. So depending on which compartment you're in, there are some who do care and some that do not care. So you might actually have one guy who thinks that he's going to rise up in the ranks by harassing someone, like some of the insiders that have spoken to me. And in fact, I'm saying this because it just happened. And then he got severely reprimanded because he was not supposed to be threatening people. So it's a big mess. I mean, yes, there are... here's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
How the heck are we going to go out there and see the backside of the moon and confirm what all these insiders are telling us, that it looks like Manhattan at night? We don't have the technology. Nobody in the civilian world can fly out a little quadcopter into outer space.
No, we can't do that.
How do we know? How can we verify it? Right? We're landbound. We're stuck here on Earth. We don't have the technology like a sailing ship to go sail off into the cosmos.
We're at their mercy to tell us these things.
That's true. And if you think about the technologies that we're seeing in the sky that are floating around all the time, people are seeing UFO sightings, and there was just, I don't know if you saw this, it was on Huffington Post yesterday, George, it was a purple UFO in Peru.
Peru, I've been tracking that story, okay. It's amazing.
I'm sure you have, right, yeah. The coast, what am I thinking? So, I mean, look, and I keep telling people this, if even one UFO sighting is real, then the whole frickin' thing is real.
That's what I tell Linda Moulton Howe about crop formations. She gets upset when people say most of them aren't real. She wants 20, 25, 30% of them to be real. And I tell her, Linda, all you need is one. Not even 1%. One formation.
George, I got out there with my own hands and confirmed the research of Dr. Gil Levengood, where I could see that the growth nodes of the wheat stalks were actually bent. You can't do that with a board and some rope.
No. No, you can't. You'd be there for 14 weeks.
Yeah, there's 39 confirmed sightings of the crop circles spontaneously appearing right in front of people's eyes in like 3 or 4 seconds. So all 39 of those people are lying, and then we have reports of crop circles that literally go all the way back to 700-some A.D., where Archbishop of Lyon, France, named Agobard, actually declared it illegal for people to remove crops out of crop circle formations. And bear in mind, he did not deny that crop circles existed. He made it illegal to take the crops out of them because so many people were doing it that the farmers were getting angry.
Their fields were destroyed.
Yeah, and people were taking all the crops away. Then in 1687, you got the story of the mowing devil. This guy says, I'd rather have the devil mow my crops than you. He wakes up in the middle of the night with bright light coming in his window, and the next morning there's a perfect crop circle on the ground.
Devil did it.
And so they think, obviously, it's got to be the devil.
Yeah.
You got this guy, Dr. Robert Plott, one of the early scientists in the 1600s, who cataloged multiple crop circle formations, including squares, triangles, circles, that were appearing on his land in southern England, Staffordshire, just like what we're seeing now. So this is nothing new.
I have long believed, David, like the Gaia theory of a living planet, and interesting that we have our TV shows with Gaia television, but I've always believed that this planet is alive and that the crop formations could very well be its form of communication with us.
That's certainly an intriguing hypothesis, and that could be part of it. I think also, if we took that hypothesis into account, one of the useful things that these circles are doing is for time travelers. If you're a time traveler, it's like having a flip book that tells you when to come in. You look for the picture you need, and that's when you pop in. So if they've been doing this since 700 AD, they got a 1,300-year span where they just look for the right picture and say, boom, okay, George Norrie, David Wilcock, 2015, there we go, bam, I'm in.
I love it. Okay, I'm going to throw a lot of stuff your way over the next 3 hours.
Hey, I'm a juggler, so throw me bowling balls, hatchets, and flaming torches, and we'll get it all up in the air.
You got it. First and foremost, I want to ask you about the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Do you still get this wherever you go at the events you're at, assuming I don't mention it in front of a panel?
Yeah, I still got a big red mark on my butt from the wet towel whipping you always give me bringing that up.
I know that. I know that. But you do. You still get a lot of people that bring this up.
Well, I can't avoid it. You know, it's like I got beaten with the Cayce stick. It's in my face.
Edgar Cayce, one of the great American prophets of his time, and you very well could be him.
I'll just again go over some of the bullet points, which are: A, I look exactly like him. That's been confirmed by forensic police.
I agree with that.
It's been confirmed by portrait artists.
You both have that round nose and everything else.
Orthodontists, dentists, everybody. We also have the astrology, which is highly crazy. We had independent astrologers audit my planets and show that for a 127-year period after Edgar Cayce's death in 1945, there's only one day and one time where the planets line up as well as they do, where it's the tightest alignment with his birth planets, and that happens to be March 8, 1973. And it's actually even down to the hour, and that's when I was born. 11:16 p.m. Schenectady, New York, March 8, 1973. Now, all the forensic astrologers can try to find out what my weaknesses are, but there it is, my birthday.
I love it.
That's then it. We have, like, I haven't even disclosed because they're all personal contacts, but literally now everybody of any significance in Cayce's life that are in the books like Edgar Cayce's Photographic Legacy, I've identified all of them. I stopped after about the first six. I've now identified probably four or five more. And these are the people who are still right now today, the closest people to me, the people who I talk to all the time. They look almost identical to the people in the book, and I didn't even figure it out. They just seemingly randomly show up in my life.
That's wild.
It's in my face all the time.
Yeah.
So I can't get away from this thing.
That is something else.
Yeah. Reincarnation is a very important aspect of our lives. We're all here to keep redoing the patterns of existence that we've set up throughout lifetime to lifetime. And I would say that I've contributed to the field of reincarnation greatly in the book that I just wrote, Synchronicity Key, where I'm showing that, in fact, there are cycles of time in which all these things that are happening in history are actually scheduled and structured, and they keep repeating in very precise intervals, so we know before we get here exactly what's going to happen. Is there going to be a war? Is there going to be a depression? What's going to happen while we're alive so we can plan out our lives in advance?
Synchronicity Key, of course, is something that is spot on. It's almost like my thoughts of there are no coincidences. But
yeah.
What creates, David, this synchronicity out there, this internet connection between things?
I think ultimately you have to look at multidimensional identity. And what I mean by that is, in the greatest, greatest sense, all the esoteric materials and all the great ancient teachings and world religions tell us that there is only identity, that the universe, if I'm going to go Tibetan Buddhist on you for a second, the universe is made of awareness that is empty, meaning it has no true form. And so they meditate on this empty awareness and say, this is who I really am. I am the awareness that is creating the experience of a universe. And apparently, if you do that long enough, then you activate this rainbow body where you no longer need a physical body and you reunite with your true self. But most of us, it's going to take millions and millions of years and many lifetimes to actually reach that level of purity where every thought is love. And on the way to get there, we go through multiple incarnations, and versions of us that we would consider to be in the future, even though time is an illusion, are actually guiding us along that course. And even though the path is already known, it's kind of like a folding accordion where you have a certain number of ribs, but the length of the accordion can be changed. So this part of us in the future sees that we have to go through all these steps, but it wants to shorten the amount of actual duration that it takes to go through the actual steps themselves.
You were talking at a panel at how with these rainbow people that some of them have just simply dematerialized right in front of other people.
Well, yeah, there's 160,000 documented cases of that in China and Tibet alone.
That's amazing.
Actually. Yeah. It is crazy. And as I've said, there's a Catholic priest, Father Francis Teo, who was hired Father Francis Tiso, I'm sorry.
Tiso.
Who was hired by the Institute of Noetic Sciences, or IONS, to actually go to Tibet and physically witness somebody turn into rainbow body. And this was actually witnessed, and what happens is that it appears that there's a cessation of life, there's a cessation of breathing, heart rate, brainwave activity. They wrap up the body in these colorful robe cloths of sashes and stuff, but you can kind of see through it a little bit, and what ends up happening is, very unlike normal human death, where the skeleton always stays essentially the same size, the whole body starts shrinking down over the course of 7 days. And after 7 days, all that you get left is this little human-shaped figurine of ash. It's about 6 or 7 inches long. And the rest of the body is gone. But in the meantime, people are reporting seeing rainbows rising off of the hut where this is happening, smelling perfume, hearing music. And then the person who did this appears in sort of like a ghostly form to the people who he had known or she had known, because it's happened to men and women, and gives them these powerful spiritual messages and acts like a spiritual guide.
What's the catalyst for this to happen?
Essentially, if you want to get there, the practice is 13 years where you meditate and try to never be wavered from having every thought in your mind be a thought of love. And that's a lot of work. I couldn't do it. I don't think anybody in our modern world could really do that. You're so tranced out because you're meditating all the time that you only actually need to sleep about 3 or 4 hours a day. And even if you're eating, whatever you're doing all day long, you're just in a state of meditation. And the funny part is I'm continuing to investigate this and research it more, and I'm reading a very interesting book on it called Rainbow Painting by this guy Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche.
Explain that again.
Rainbow. See, I'm fast on my feet here, buddy. It's like boxing.
You are fast, but you know, with a name like that, you could have said anything. Who's going to doubt you?
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Bam, bam. So anyway, this guy said, okay, you got to meditate for 13 years. That's all you focus on is every thought is a loving thought. But I've been reading further through his book now, and it blew me away because he said, look, the actual meditation is really easy. Any time that you felt this sort of cosmic consciousness and the sense that you are part of this expansive greater unity that the universe is made of, which we've all had it to some degree, everybody gets a taste. The idea is to stay there. And if you stay there and you just have a practice where even though the meditation is kind of dull and you just kind of keep returning to this very basic, yep, I'm going to be happy, I'm going to be peaceful, I'm not going to let stuff bother me. I'm not going to get worried about things. I'm not going to have fear. I'm just going to be happy and just bliss out here. You just keep doing that, regardless of what the universe throws at you, regardless of which way the wind blows, and 13 years of that, and bam, you've graduated from the entire need to have a physical body in the universe, and you go back to being pure light.
It's amazing. How do you come up with these?
Well, I'm passionate about it. I also think I've been guided. I think this part of myself in the future, this higher self, has been giving me all kinds of synchronicity and guideposts and so forth to, like they used to call it, library angels. You go into the library and you just happen to find a book somewhere in the card catalog or in the stacks. I used to have that happen all the time. Now with the internet, it's even easier. I mean, I'm very nimble on the internet, so if I'm searching for one thing and then I find other data, I'll use that data and catalog that stuff. And, one of the cool things that I do is anytime I find anything that I think I might be able to use, I put it in my journal.
That's smart.
Every single thing I read that I might ever want to use for anything, it's documented, and I can go back and audit my journal and go find it.
Stay with us. David Wilcock with us when we come back. David was talking at the Conscious Life Expo about the rings of Saturn, and what he said could astound you. Well, as I was mentioning, my interview with David Wilcock on Beyond Belief is the highest watched program on Beyond Belief, and you can watch it free. Simply go to this website, www.beyondbelief.com. Simple as that. And you can also, we'll tell you about David's shows when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. David Wilcock with us. David, before we get into these many subjects with you, for folks who want to watch you on the Gaia Television Network, how do they get to you?
Well, actually, the cool part is that they're running a promotion for my show right now. And so if people just go to GaiaTV.com/David99, then between now and Monday, the 2nd of March, you can watch a whole month for 99 cents. And they can see your show, George. They can see my shows. Everything else that's on there is over 6,000 different titles of all kinds of cool paranormal stuff on there now people can watch.
Good for you. You having fun doing it? It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I worked really hard 3 months in a row now, and I've just earned out this, like, 3 months off period, which I'm really excited
about. Enjoy. And you're still living where? In the L.A. area?
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. All right, let's get into...
Good as long as my dog doesn't jump out the frickin' window in the middle of the busiest intersection in Santa Monica and run away.
How high up are you?
No, I was down in town the other day, and my dog just decided she wanted to smell poop and pee on the sidewalks. Just jumped out the window.
Better the dog than you, David.
She's okay, but, man, it was horrible.
Thanks. Thanks for the enlightening subject, Mr. Wilcock. Okay, Conscious Life, you're there and you're talking about the rings of Saturn and you're saying they weren't originally there. What are you talking about?
Well, you mentioned Richard Hoagland before, and I did an event of his at Joshua Tree, I think back in like 2006, and at some point this guy walks up to me and throws his arm around me as I'm walking out of the room, says, you're about 75% correct. And I'm like, okay, what's the other 25%? He's like, well, that's going to take some time. So we go and have a meeting, and took this dude almost 10 years to actually reveal to me the whole nature of what he had to say, or at least what he was authorized to say. And he told me that within the United States government, there's a faction, at least, that he's working with that wanted this stuff to come out. And apparently... they've gone out in spaceships that we've had for a long time, that they've built ever since, you know, a few years after Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Reversed engineered type?
Yep. And if you think about it, obviously they're going to be able to leave Earth's atmosphere and go out into space.
Sure.
So there's some really, really cool stuff out there because, as it turns out, we're not the first ones that got here. There's highly technological civilizations that got here millions of years ago, and built out a whole bunch of really cool stuff that there is to go look for and explore. And the rings of Saturn happen to be one of the most interesting sites for people to go visit.
Well, that's kind of wild to think about, but it's probably true, isn't it?
Well, I believe so. And part of what leads me to this is you have Hoagland's Insider, who, again, I met almost 10 years ago for the first time. You have all these people that have proven their bona fides in different ways. They've showed me military records. They've showed me discharge papers. One guy showed me hundreds of pages of blueprints that would have cost millions of dollars to produce of a vast underground facility. Why would he have something like that that's fake, you know? Pages and pages and pages and pages of accounts of the big names that you'd associate with the Illuminati, and these were accounts that had staggering amounts of money in them. He showed me a photograph of some of the real stuff on Mars that we've never been able to see, and all the annotations and little words that pointed to certain parts of the picture were all in German. And, you know, you start talking to all these different people, and I'd like to think of myself as having a holographic memory. I may not be able to consciously remember everything, but if I hear something again, then I remember when I heard it before.
Right, right.
It's and so you down. Talk to people over the course of 20 years who are insiders, as I have, and a lot of it I don't even remember, but now I'm starting to write it all down, but before I wouldn't necessarily remember it, but then somebody else says it, and I can finish their sentence for them. I know what you're about to say, because I've heard this before. And so that's, and then what I also do is, as much as humanly possible, I try to correlate what people are telling me with real-world data. So, for example, this guy who was Hoagland's Insider said that we've gone out to the rings of Saturn, and what we find is gigantic rooms made out of a glass-like material that's all shattered, tumbling end over end in space, which they call ice crystals at NASA, and that when you go up to them in the ship, what you're seeing is rooms with chairs and consoles and windows and platforms built for people who are about 70 to 100 feet tall. And that's a big reveal right there.
70 to 100 feet tall?
Yeah, if you compared one of those people to somebody like you or me, then that would mean that our height compared to them would be the equivalent of maybe like somebody who's 6 inches tall. So they'd barely get above your ankles. So these people were enormous. In fact, I was coming off the hiking trail that I do today. I have several that I do. And I was watching these two girls walk ahead of me next to a giant telephone.
Sure you were.
And, yeah, I was only doing this for scientific purposes.
Yes, exactly.
Even though they had, you know, very, very nicely tight black sweatpants on, whatever. I wasn't
Dave.
Paying attention. And I'm looking at the telephone pole, and I'm thinking, my God, the progenitors would have been at least as tall as that pole compared to them, if not taller. And it's almost impossible to even imagine. But apparently, if you know, first of all, everybody's human. That's one of the biggest lies we've been given is you hear people say aliens are creatures, and that's very misdirecting because we have a huge human family out there in the galaxy. They're everywhere. And some of them are pretty darn scary. I mean, you got insectoids, you got people that are like humanoids from marine life, people that are humanoids from reptilian life, people that are humanoids from avian life.
The praying mantis type?
Yeah. The mantids are out there. There's all kinds of different types. But everybody's going to end up having a head, two arms, two legs, basic biology, DNA similar to our DNA. In fact, I think the largest discrepancy they've ever found in DNA of any extraterrestrial species is about 4% from ours. So we're all pretty similar. And the people who are out there in the galaxy are all at various stages of evolution. And guess what? You can go a lot farther than we have here. And those people got here millions of years ago. In fact, this was actually like a prison colony. The people who made it here were escapees on the run from others who they had made war with and had gotten very angry, and they were essentially sent here as sort of like a rehab clinic, and they just never healed from their warring ways. And that's why this ring that they were originally building around Saturn, they're saying, oh, this is just a housing complex. See, we got all these rooms where people can live. But their enemies were saying, yes, but you guys are two-thirds of the way done building this ring around Saturn. And once you complete it, you'll have a weapon that would allow you to destroy any planet in the galaxy. And apparently what it does is, it's like Tesla's earthquake machine where you create some initially small beats, but it builds up a resonance wave similar to the Roman legions had to vary their step of marching across bridges or else the bridges would literally come apart and fall down. It's the same principle here. If you just keep using the same rhythm over and over again, it gets to be such a huge wave that they could then harness that like a laser and shoot it at a planet and blow up the planet. So what happened is their enemies came and literally destroyed that entire glass ring. It wasn't really glass. It's like a transparent aluminum of some kind, very advanced alloy that they were using and mining various moons to make it. But the point is it was destroyed, and our people have gone out and surveyed the wreckage extensively. And so here's an example where I validated something. Hoagland's Insider says it's at the very edge of the B ring. And I go and I look in the NASA photos at the very edge of the B ring, and sure enough,
there it is.
You can see the shadows of all these chunks of ice casting the shadows on the rest of the rings. Ice, quote unquote.
Good work.
Yeah.
Zechariah Sitchin, he's no longer with us. What did you think of his work?
Well, I have an interesting perspective on that. For those, I think hardly anybody doesn't know who he is, but he's the guy that wrote a series of very exhaustively scholarly books on the Anunnaki and the Sumerian cuneiform.
Called the Earth Chronicles.
That's right. And the first one was called The 12th Planet, and the one that really got me hooked initially was called Genesis Revisited, which I read probably in 1995 after I graduated from college. And that was one of the earlier books I'd read, and it just blew me away. I couldn't believe.
Me too.
I mean, he was making leaps in logic, and I could see that. He was speculating in some cases, but informed speculation. You know, he's looking at things and making connections, and wow. So I've always felt that Sitchin was really giving us a very valuable view into our history, because this data is written down. It's right there to read. And we just say, oh, that's mythology. But is it really? I mean, these people, some of Sitchin's greatest scholarship includes documentation of very accurate characteristics of the planets in our solar system, their colors, their sizes, their relative distances, all kinds of information that they shouldn't have been able to have at the level of technology we assume that they had at that time in history.
David, he was probably one of the best researchers that I've ever come across. I'm glad I had the opportunity of knowing him before he passed at the age of 90. His theories, of course, are chopped up by Michael Heiser and a few other people, but I think he was spot on.
I completely agree. I think there are certain distortions in what he said, but I also feel that the majority of what is in there is at least in the right direction, if not accurate. It's funny because at the Conscious Life Expo, I bumped into him, and at the time, there was this clothing company called 2012, before 2012 came and went.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to have 2012 on their clothes.
That was the year we gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes, and so yeah. I had this like crazy Mad Max-style Burning Man jacket from 2012 that I was wearing, where it's all these different pieces of fabric that don't look like they're related to each other, all woven together. And I walked in with this like cosmic apocalyptic jacket on, and he's there in the elevator with me, and he's looking at me like, uh-oh. I'm like, no, dude, it's cool. I'm all right. I'm a good guy.
I'm okay. I'm not here to get you. All right, let's move on to some other great topics here that we can just dive into. First and foremost, let me ask you this, because you're pretty worldly. What do you see as the single biggest issue facing us on this planet right now?
YouTube kitten videos. Absolutely. We've got to stop watching so many YouTube kitten videos.
Beyond that, you are into the coffee tonight, aren't you?
Try to keep it light, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think, honestly, the question, there's layers of the answer, and I'd say the answer can ultimately be backed up with scientific evidence. What we really are seeing is that we're in a living cosmos, and as you said earlier, George, the Earth is alive. It is a sentient being. And the big problem that we have is that we are not getting what we're supposed to be getting from the conscious universe. There is a lesson built into the universe and built into who we are, and it's about loving and respecting each other and being good stewards of the Earth. And the Earth is going to snap back, and the Earth is going to fight back against us if we're not being loving enough. And this is the kind of thing that people who are on the sort of worldly planetary elite or Illuminati or whatever you want to call it, wavelength, they really can't understand this, because they're coming at this as if, well, we're saving the Earth because we're creating chaos, and then from the chaos, order will arise. So we control both sides of the chaos, and whichever one leads to order, we're still in charge. Well, here's the problem with that. They would typically say, okay, well, you can't blame a fire for burning down a forest. You could burn a whole mountain with one candle. You can't blame the candle. Well, the problem is that you guys are not a natural force. You're human beings, and because we're sentient, conscious beings, we are accountable for what we do. So it's funny, because these Illuminati people, and I am in contact with people who are in contact with the Illuminati at very high levels, and so there's lots of two-way exchange going on here. They have tried to recruit me again and again. They've tried to bribe me. They've tried to threaten me with death, threaten me with torture. I will not join their group, but I still get information from whistleblowers. So what I can say is that we're having this back-and-forth dialogue, and I'm saying, well, how can you guys blame the people for being ignorant when you made them that way? You've weaponized the food supply. You put things in the food like citric acid, refined sugar, white flour, which has a protein in it ever since the 1960s called gliadin.
Which is bleached out, isn't it?
And makes you addicted. It's like as addictive as heroin. They're deliberately attacking people's pineal glands. They put fluoride in the water. You go to Walmart and there's baby water contains fluoride. Well, great. Let's get them while they're young. So, okay, you guys, you're saying humans are idiots. You're saying that we're all sheep. But you are doing, you're weaponizing the food supply and you're weaponizing information through controlled mainstream media to make people that way. So what do you expect is going to happen? Oh, well, we're superior because we can put out all this satanic imagery in the Grammys and on the Oscar awards and, you know, in movies and nobody sees it. No, people are waking up. They're seeing it. We have wolves amongst the herd of sheep here. That's how they see it. But the problem is pretty soon the sheep are going to gang up on you, and that looks like what's happening. And they're really, really, really concerned about it right now. Their game is running out. I think the whole thing's going to break out in a big way. I've heard that the Snowden documents are vastly bigger than what we've seen so far, and there's some real cans of whoop-ass getting ready to be opened up here. Can I say that on the radio?
Well, I prefer not, but you already did.
I'm sorry.
Wait till I'm on your show.
Oh, wow.
Of course, you know I never use those kinds of words.
Depends on whether we're on stage or backstage, I guess.
I guess that's true, doesn't it? Don't tell trade secrets, David. I want to talk about Genesis with you next hour.
Okay.
But in a few minutes that we still have left here, with what has been going on, though, with this planet and with, you know, ISIS and whether we created it or not, there just seems to be something awkward, out of kilter. Don't you feel that, too?
Oh, it's so much more in your face than ever before. We've got, you know, balmy summer temperature weather here in Los Angeles. It was 85 a couple weeks ago. I almost had to run the air conditioning. And now we've got the Great Lakes, you know, huge percentage of the Great Lakes icing over in
frozen.
One night.
Frozen.
People
yeah.
going 28 below zero around Michigan. Unbelievable. You know, it's like if you can't figure out that the climate change is real, forget about whether it's global warming because it's getting hotter and it's getting colder. It's going in both directions.
My mother says Detroit's is colder than she can ever remember. She's been there since 1949. I told her, Mom, just stay in the house. Don't even go out.
Yeah.
She's 85 years old. Who wants your 85-year-old mother to be out there? I've tried to get her to move to Florida, but she won't go.
I mean, you used to read these stories, at least, you know, in English class in high school. I remember reading stories about this guy in Alaska, and as soon as you go outside, the ice crystals start forming in your nose.
Yeah.
Well, that's happening to people now. You know, it's like you have to have every part of your body covered. And now people are going to want to get those winter coats where, you know, you zip up the top of the hood and it's like this thing that sticks out 6 inches in front of your face.
Yeah. Did you ever put your tongue on a metal fence in the winter?
Oh, yeah. I love to do
that. And you got stuck to it. How'd you pull loose without ripping your tongue apart?
Well, I can't really say that in polite company, but it does work.
Somebody needs water to put on you or something. All right, stay with us, David. We're going to come back and talk more with David Wilcock. We're just picking his brain right now. We're going to talk about Genesis and his thoughts on fallen angels described, of course, in the book of Enoch, Genesis. That David will be next on Coast to Coast AM.